Hello?
Hello.
Hey, hi, Harvey. It's Pat.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am doing well. Were you there late? Were you at the class last week?
No, I missed class last week.
I think he records them.
Yeah, he does. I went out to the website, and I had a little bit of trouble. I went out to the original link, and it only had the first one that I attended, and then Bernadette sent me a new link, and it has the second one on it. So,
Good. How's everything going?
Huh?
How's everything going for you?
Good. I gave my notice at work, and so
good for you.
Taking the leap, man.
Good for you. What was the reaction like?
He said, you know, I want to be doing something like similar in my life. You know, everybody's been very supportive, so that's good.
Good.
Yeah. So I just got my logo today, and I'll start work. I've been working on my website content. And I hope to have that done here in the next 2 weeks and be ready to start my getting things out there.
All right, good for you. Good for you. I'm glad to hear it for you.
Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm basically trying to do a lot of networking right now. I'm having a lot of coffees with people, and I'm going to some networking groups and events, and I did one public speaking engagement. I've got a couple others lined up, so I'm expecting it to take a little while to build, but right now I'm investing in making those contacts and spreading the word, and hopefully at some point, I'll start to get some big payback from that.
Yeah, that's kind of I just finished it this just a little bit ago. I had a session with my own coach because I've been working with her since I started the class, and.
Right.
We made a list of all the things I have to get done in the next 2 weeks, and she said, I'm going to hold
you accountable. Welcome, Mrs. How are you guys doing?
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Doing super. Thank you.
Who's
Let's
there?
Talk about what's on your mind, what kind of questions or clarifications or reflections you've had on our first two seminars.
You know, this is Pat.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I'm really struck by one of the things that that I knew all along that has helped me to really rethink things like my website contact and my introduction letters and that kind of thing is that the idea of you really have to step inside your client's shoes and look at hiring you from their perspective. And really understanding what it is they are going to be looking for, which then led me to the further realization that I have to really understand my niche, the niche that I've chosen, and really begin to kind of do some market interviewing around that niche.
Then my job here is done. That's great. I appreciate that. And we're going to further the discussion of exactly what you talked about today as we talk about an application of how exactly to do that in getting in your client's perspective, to take on that perspective and really have an empathic perspective. And your emphasis on niche is really important because the who is exactly the focus of your conversation, whether that's a conversation one-on-one, whether it's a conversation with engagement on your website, a newsletter, a blog. You're always in conversation with someone. When anything I write, and because I'm a talker, I dictate. So I have a little digital dictation device and plug it in for upload and transcription. I'm envisioning a particular person or an audience. So I'm speaking to that person.
Uh-huh.
And that mode just helps me do that more directly because it's the way I do it naturally. So what you're talking about, I think, is really important to have the specific person or people in mind. The more that you know about them, the more it will seem like a truly authentic conversation, because it's like a conversation with a best friend or a good friend.
Mm-hmm.
You pick up where you left off, you can see that person months later, and you pick up in the sentence that you were interrupted in before. So it seems very natural and very authentic to really resonate with their experience, because that's what you're doing, is to help them facilitate their story, and the whole process is one of facilitating your story, your professional story. So thanks, Pat. That's a great synopsis and application.
Thanks.
Was there any question you had from that? This is to Pat specifically. Was there any remaining question you had?
I think it really spurred me to think about the ways that I could do that. So.
Okay. Great. I think it will be a little more helpful in doing that with some of the things we're going to talk about with our discussion in this seminar about mindset mastery.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Okay. Super. Who else? Thoughts, questions, reflections?
This is Harvey. I'm here. I don't have anything specific. I'm enjoying the program and getting a lot out of it, but I don't have anything specific this week.
Thank you. Your check is in the mail. I appreciate that. Thank you for mentioning that, and thanks for all the energy and the input that you've all had. It really makes a difference. It makes it worthwhile, because it's exactly why I'm doing this, to be a benefit to you, and I hope that it is, and I'm interested in ways that it may be even more so. So thanks. Any clarifications or questions that have come up from either of the first two seminars? Or any applications that you've used that you'd like to share with the group that have made a difference?
I think, this is Harvey again, I think I've just tried to, since we first started meeting, you know, just trying to, you know, connect more to people on the inside, you know, at an emotional level. And, you know, I think it's definitely making a difference. You know, just not doing just the facts and the numbers and the why, what's the benefit, but to actually connect to another human being as a human being, I think is something that's making a difference for me.
That's very well said, and that does make, I think, a significant difference. You know, state always comes first. So when we resonate with someone and connect with them, then we co-create a new story. Remember, we talked about the application of what we know from neuroscience in terms of conversation, that the first few words we use boots up a particular mindset that processes the entire remainder of the conversation. So when we're aware of that and really began in a connection and an empathic resonance to co-create something together, then that's a very different mindset than when someone questions trust or responds in a defensive or an observer position. Different neurochemical system mediating those two conversations. So great. Thanks. Anything else before we move into our material? Okay, well, thanks for the input, and I'm going to put us on lecture mode. Okay, we're going to discuss mindset mastery development. Remember, I mentioned our state of mind determines the meaning we attach to something, and the meaning then determines the behavior. I gave the example. You're at home relaxing after dinner with your partner, having a glass of wine, a great discussion. There's a little noise in the backyard. Probably don't even register it. Next evening, you're at home alone. You've just had the induction of a different mindset. You've just watched Criminal Minds. You hear the same. Don't ask me how I know that. You heard the same noise in the backyard, and suddenly there's kind of an alert. You process it really differently. The meaning becomes different. The state of mind determines the meaning we attach to something. So keep that in mind as we move into this material. Now, a mindset is simply a set of assumptions and beliefs that determine how we perceive, process, and then behave. It's analogous to the software program on a computer. Each state of mind is its own software program. Our mindsets consciously and unconsciously determine our choices. Elite athletes know how to get themselves in an optimum state before going on the court or field and how to sustain it. Actors and speakers do as well. Anyone who tells a story does. Getting in state is mental, emotional, physical. We're going to talk about some specifics of that. So, how do you get a potential client you may not know or don't even see in a state of mind to consider your service or product? The next time you want someone to get on board with your idea or service, simply tell them a story where you spell out the best outcome. Tell a story in simple, heartfelt language. Story is the best way to plant ideas into someone's mind. We know now from the mind and brain sciences that storytelling is the most powerful way to activate our brains as well as to create memories. When we're being told an effective story, it activates not only the language processing areas, but also the areas used in experiencing the events of the story. Someone tells us how delicious a peach is, our sensory cortex lights up. When it's about emotion, our right neocortex gets active. When the story characters grab objects, motor neurons activate in our brains, even though we're just watching it. When the characters observe a scene, vision-related neurons fire. A story pulls the whole brain into it and puts it to work. Stories affect us mentally as well as physically. Ann Crindall at the Dartmouth Brain Lab showed how viewers' brains resonated with the specific emotion enacted on the screen. When the central character was angry, the viewers' brains registered anger as well. When the scene was sad, the viewers' brains corresponded. When they feel disgust, that brain region, the anterior insula, fires. We sense the other person's intentions and imagine what an experience means in his or her mind. Mind sight. Our innate ability to see into each other's minds relies on our mirror neurons sensing another's experience and purpose. What this means is that the teller's state of mind and intention is key to the listener's perception. For example, if we sense the other person is phony or distracted, we automatically distance and tune out. When someone genuinely smiles and looks directly in our eyes, it enhances the inclination to relax and feel more trusting. This means that getting in state needs to be before you face your audience or client or customer. Relax your body, control your breath, get solidly grounded to access the optimum state of mind for a particular task. The primary reason to get in state is to concentrate your energy on a full, undisturbed immersion in your engagement. The law of authenticity is this: the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. A significant leadership competency is self-regulation and self-management, knowing your own skills and deploying them effectively. People like, respect, trust, and are influenced by those who have the ability to remain calm and thoughtful. This default setting to remain centered and grounded no matter what essential success paradigm. Like any state of mind, it's contagious, amygdala to amygdala. Regulating your own state of mind in a sustained way is the most effective influence on someone else to do the same. So let's look at the difference in a simplistic way between success and failure. The two most important determinants of success, one, beliefs, and two, state management. One, beliefs. Our beliefs determine what we will or won't do. What we believe, the meaning we feel certain will come from situations, determines how we behave and what we'll do. Social neuroscientists show us that we have to believe in what we're selling or we won't sell. Our state of mind, the particular software package, determines the meaning attached to a stimulus, and the meaning attached determines the behavior. Each state of mind contains its own beliefs. How can you then create a new belief? The oak sleeps in the acorn. Success comes to those who become success conscious. Failure comes to those who indifferently allow themselves to become failure conscious. The bird waits in the egg. The only known method of voluntary conscious development of belief is repetition of affirmations to your unconscious. Visions are the seedlings of reality. If you can't see significant wealth in your imagination, in your vision, you won't see it in your bank account. Systematic, repeated visualization rewires the brain. Affirmations are stories that support the visualizations to revise mind software. Each of these that I'm about to say is a state of mind. Belief, hope, courage, tolerance, confidence. Consider these as states of mind, not just the feeling states, anxiety, the doubt, all of those. These are all states of mind as well, and these are equally contagious. You're not ready for something until you believe you can acquire it. Belief can be inscribed by affirmation or repeated instructions to the unconscious mind. Repetition of affirmations to your unconscious mind is a powerful method of voluntary development of belief. Any thought that is repeatedly passed on to the unconscious mind is finally accepted and acted on. This is as true for wealth accumulation as it is for other consistent repetitions, such as crime. I'm going to send you a chapter from one of my books, Outsmart Your Brain, an instruction manual, a chapter on the old art and new science of visualization, because there's a lot more to say about this, and I want to stay focused on what we are. But it's about a systematic way of creating a visualization which rewires your brain and of creating affirmations which are the stories that support the visualization that really revise mind software. So belief is the blueprint, the software of the unconscious mind. We come to believe what we repeat to ourselves, whether it's true or false. If a lie is repeated, it ultimately is experienced as the truth. The teller ultimately can't tell the difference. Well, how does that work? The mechanism is that focus aligns the energy field of the brain, and repeated focus rewires the brain. So belief becomes an anatomical reality. So there are a couple of types of beliefs. One is global beliefs, like life is, people are, I am. Each of these affects the way we look at and interpret things and their meanings. And another type of belief are rules that we have, cause and effect. If this, then that. If, then. The kind of rules that we have without there seeming to be rules, but just our sense of cause and effect. So questions, usually unspoken, that clients or customers or patients will have. Do you have my best interest at heart? They're not going to ask you this now. What would this product or service mean to me? Does it fill wants and needs and avoid pain? Is it worth it to me? what would other people say or think? Remember, that's one of the principles of influence is social acceptance. And do I really need it now? The short term is usually associated more with pay because somebody has to give up money. Most people need to think long term to be successful. Here's a key element. Selling is a transference of emotion. You must feel certain to make someone believe. The number one way you convince someone else is if you are convinced. You will transfer whatever state of mind you're in, doubt or confidence. People will say yes much more frequently to your belief than to your product or technical sales skills. They will come to believe what you believe. So the first sell is to yourself. The other big difference between success and failure, state management. This is also so you don't get in your way. An everyday recognition or application is to look at understanding emotional couplings. And here's what I think is important about that. Regardless of how logical you think you are, your first register of any new stimulus is emotional. Any new input goes directly to the amygdala, then the hippocampus attaches meaning, then it goes to the forebrain to process consciously and intellectually to make logical sense. Now, a footnote here, the hippocampus is the primary location of the unconscious where meanings are attached. So when psychoanalysts reference the unconscious, they're really talking about this specific structure in the brain. Everything at the lower emotional brain and the midbrain is an unconscious process. So notice now the emotional activation registers before cognitive areas in the brain ever come into play to assess options. Neuroscientists, particularly neuroeconomists, have demonstrated that we make decisions, especially purchase decisions, up to 10 seconds before we're even consciously aware of them. Once we unconsciously make an emotional commitment to a yes or to a no, these lower brain structures send the conscious mind on a mission to gather all logical data to support that decision. We then cherry-pick data to support what we've already decided at a midbrain level, whether or not it's accurate, whether or not it's cause and effect. This rationalization is confirmation bias. When we make a choice, we couple memory from past experience with the best guesses of a likely future. Our lives are determined by our choices. Those choices are informed by what we focus on and shaped by the meaning that we attribute. So that part of the brain that anticipates pleasant outcomes, the nucleus accumbens, the pleasure center, activates a buy decision, a purchase decision. A don't buy decision originates in the insula, an area involved in anticipating pain, giving up some of yourself, your money. The anticipatory emotions bias as well as drive decision making. So that's how, for example, credit cards decouple buying, activation of the pleasure center, and paying, activation of the pain center in the brain. The pleasure of the purchase is segmented from the pain of future payment. This segmentation renders repayment a future abstraction. So our optimism bias also suggests, well, we'll have more money later. So this is why people spend 23% more on average when they pay by credit card than by cash or check, because they can segment these two. Now, one application also. It's hard to save because of the way our minds and our brains are wired. It's hard to resist the immediate pleasure of buying. That's a hit. Dopamine is a chemical that is chemically analogous to cocaine. It's a pleasure chemical. Making and spending money both activate the pleasure center in the brain, mediated by dopamine. So it's difficult to substitute a theory like a future need, long-term saving, retirement, for the immediate payoff. So, three reasons people fail. Not enough compelling reasons, limiting belief systems, and inability to consistently manage state of mind. And this is what I want to focus on here. Your state of mind, the particular software program you use, determines the meaning you attach to a stimulus. The meaning you attach then determines your behavior. So there are primarily two ways to regulate your state of mind: physiology and focus. Physiology is how you use your body, your biochemistry, to change your state of mind. This can include something like relaxation, deep breathing, meditation. The other, focus. What and how you focus on. From quantum physics and brain science, we recognize this. You get what you focus on, not what you want. Focus aligns your energy field. So what you focus on, what you pay attention to, determines your state of mind. Your power is what you focus on, because your state of mind then determines the meaning you attach, which determines your behavior. So the questions we ask determine what we focus on. This is why questions in mentor coaching are much more powerful than giving answers or problem solving. Questions direct the focus, therefore determine the state we're in. A couple of questions we're all usually asking without even being consciously aware of it. What does this mean? What should I do? So if you have an habitual feeling you don't like, it can come from a repeated focus and questions like, why does this always happen to me? Or, why am I overweight? Why can't I do this? The quality of your life comes down to the quality of the questions you ask daily to determine your focus. So what this means, change the questions. Ask a better question. You're always asking questions from the moment you wake up, even though you may not be aware of them consciously. If you immediately began by asking, what can go wrong today, or you know, what's the challenge going to be? That you've already begun a scenario that establishes a negative state of mind. Another bad question: can I really do this? So ask a better question. What will I create today that will be more powerful than I ever dreamed of, and have fun doing? Your brain follows your focus, whether that's positive or negative. Ask questions habitually that empower you. An example of how you get what you focus on, not what you want. The great aerialist Carl Wallenda, the patriarch of the Flying Wallendas, had performed death-defying feats on the high wire for more than 50 years. Still at the age of 71, Wallenda's capacity for focus on his intention was legendary. His concentration on success became a self-fulfilling prophecy for over five decades of triumph on the high wire. What you focus on grows. Wallenda's wife indicated that he had been anxious the day before taking the wire, a tightrope in San Juan, Puerto Rico. For the first time in all the years that she'd known him, he focused on the risk of falling. He personally supervised the attachment of the guy wires, which he had never done before. During the performance, he tragically fell to his death. You get what you focus on. Asking effective questions determines your state of mind. This is your power of focus. Ask habitual questions that empower you. The best mentors, leaders, and teachers are the ones who ask the best questions. Optimum performance in terms of state of mind. Let's discuss that. The difference between an amateur and a professional, between massive success or less, is the ability to manage your state of mind, to achieve and sustain a peak performance state. So let's apply that to your business. Selling is transferring emotion. Your state of mind will have emotional contagion. Manage your state because it induces a state in others. You associate positive or negative emotion or state to your services or product. So does your prospect. If you're not in a peak state, like a down feeling or a lesser expectation, that's going to be contagious too. Authentic energy is contagious. When your story truly excites you and you let that excitement show, it will be infectious to the audience. Your authenticity of genuine enthusiasm and conviction will resonate with the audience. Now, there's a secret here. Why does someone who begins at a peak state with a client or customer sometimes come across as hyper or like a typical salesperson and turn the prospect off? You probably each experienced it. And create a response like an eye roll at an over-the-top or off-the-wall spiel that turns the listener off within a few words. The answer? They don't begin where the client is. Remember, the first thing we do with a client is to empathically resonate, to become attuned and find a way to communicate that experience. The result is to co-create a common ground, a reciprocal connection. Then the client will go someplace new with you to follow your lead. You co-create a state that's a mutual journey, a process to arrive stepwise at the same place. Many years ago, when I was still practicing psychoanalysis, I had a very succinct and powerful lesson about this from a very accomplished woman executive in analysis with me. I offered an interpretation to her that I thought was a particular insight. She paused, and the silence was a little bit longer. I knew something was up. Finally, she rose up on one elbow, turned around on the analytic couch, looked directly at me, and said, "No, Kruger, first you have to be with me before I can go someplace new with you." A brilliant, simple synopsis of this principle that we're talking about. Consider these questions for your reflection. How much money or how many clients have you lost because you haven't been in a peak state in the last 3 months, in the last 3 years? How much has it cost you emotionally, regret or pain or less energy or less money, of not being in a peak state? How much has it cost you emotionally in the last 3 months, in the last 3 years? In the next 10 years, what will it cost you if you don't master and attend to this ability? In the next 10 years, what if you operate at peak state and enjoy the process? Selling is a transference of emotion. You associate your state to your product or service. People associate your state to your product or service. People buy a state. State changing is activating. It stimulates the error detection mechanism, among other things, which causes someone to pay particular attention. So there are four important principles I just want to summarize here. State is what you're selling more than a product or service. Selling is influencing the client's focus, the value, the benefits, the pleasure to avoid pain. Questions determine what we focus on and the state we're in. And the mindset of self-reflection fosters thoughtfulness, depth, and wisdom. So let's look at some aspects of peak state to match the optimum state of mind to the specific task. Anchor yourself for success. Peak performance comes from being in a peak state. The quickest way to change your state is to change the way you're using your body to cue that change. Develop a power cue or gesture that immediately puts you in an optimum state. Remember, your optimum state for some things, such as a presentation, may be to energize yourself and generate optimism. For other things, like working with a client, it may be to get fully centered and grounded. To go to sleep, a different state than either of those two. To be in a full relaxation, to ease into sleep. Your gesture and focus phrase will need to match the state you want to enter. It may be, rather than a gesture, a simple physiology like a deep breath, deep breathing in, relaxation, breathing out, any tension, and a focus phrase to align the energy of your brain. At times, it may be helpful to have a quick way to change a mood and to move a mindset to one of confidence and peak performance. Here are some additional ways to regulate your state of mind for a specific task. Develop a mantra. There's a blog in my blog archives on mantras toward the neuroscience of self-regulation revisited. Just remember the title mantras. It's the only one with mantras in the title in the blog archives. There's an explanation and a story there that I think you'll enjoy. So a mantra simply can be a cue, like something you remind yourself to do, the focus and physiology, the focus phrase to align your energy field, and the physiology such as a deep breath. Recall an instance of optimum performance, including details of that time, as well as how you felt after your accomplishment. Set a specific goal for your performance. Don't judge or observe while you're doing it. Remain immersed in the flow to sustain your mindset. Even a nanosecond of moving to an observer position can disrupt that flow. I've worked with a number of pro athletes and actors and Olympic performers to help them with this sense of flow to not even for a nanosecond pause to wonder what an opponent is thinking, to sustain that state of flow, that state of mind. Confidence is a state of mind. We know from numerous neuroscience studies that emotions and states of mind are contagious, and energy field transfer from amygdala to amygdala, person to person. Einstein referred to this as the unified field theory. He emphasized that we're each a bundle of energy and interact with another person who's also a bundle of energy, and those energy fields intersect and interact the same with each person and the collective energy field of a group of other people. Confidence is a state of mind. It's contagious from amygdala to amygdala. People naturally associate confidence with expertise. Remember the first two quizzes that we did in the first seminar. Mirror neurons also play a role in our affinity for confident people. The induction of a shared experience, the mutual influence of energy fields, plays a huge role. That confidence is what initially engages, what people will pay you for. Remember the Wharton and Carnegie Mellon studies. We now know that confidence is a greater predictor and determinant of success than competence or expertise. That's huge. Be aware of conscious and unconscious biases as well. For example, in studies with business school graduates, men initiate salary increases 40% more than women do. And when both ask, women ask for 30% less than men. At Manchester Business School in England, Professor Marilyn Davidson says, I've been doing this for about 7 years, and every year there are massive differences between the male and female responses. The male students expect to earn significantly more than the women, and when you look at what the students think they deserve to earn, again, the differences are huge. I'm just mentioning that aspect of unconscious bias. There are many that we need to be aware of as mentor coaches. We can never earn more in the outside world than we can earn in our own minds. For example, if we earn 10% more or less than that income thermostat is set at, we may automatically and unconsciously engage in automatic behaviors and patterns to reestablish the status quo and move the thermostat back to the set point. We have to achieve it in our minds to change the thermostat before we can achieve it in reality. And once something unconscious becomes conscious, it's no longer unconscious. We always present in a manner consistent with our self-concept, just as we do in any other role that we play. A self-concept regulates every aspect of our lives. The software that drives the behavior the template of the story that we write. Confidence is a state of mind that then becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Also, I mentioned the blog on confidence that's archived, too. I suggest if you have time to look at that as well, if you haven't already. If you do everything except close an agreement, let's call it a sale, or not make a specific professional recommendation to a client about your services and your fee, which is the real closure of the initial consultation, your self-concept in that area needs to be addressed. The professional must always maintain the initial initiatives. You've never heard other professionals like doctors or attorneys say something wishy-washy like, well, do you think it'd be helpful for us to work together? They know it would. They know what they need to recommend. The professionals make a specific, confident recommendation. You don't let the guy with the shovel decide how many elephants are in the parade. Now, consider from your point of view, when is the best time to make a sale? This is a quiz to you. This is your third seminar quiz. When's it the best time to make a sale? After a vacation and you're relaxed? When you have debt? After you've had a long dry spell? It's none of the above. The best time to make a sale is right after a sale. Confidence is a state of mind. Sustaining an optimum state is as important as changing a negative state. People buy your confidence. And consider this from the client's point of view now. We're shifting to the client's point of view. The major things that hold the client back from making a purchase. Fear of making a mistake. Concern of not getting value. Worry of paying too much. Question of not being able to use the product or service. And the final one that eclipses all of the others above, although those are important, lack of confidence of the professional in making the recommendation. The major thing that holds the salesperson back is the fear of rejection. The client may say no very often. The major thing that keeps you from getting what you want, and this is let's consider what I'm about to say in italics, okay, if you can preview that. The major thing that keeps you from getting what you want is your story about why you can't get what you want. I'm going to say that again. The major thing that keeps you from getting what you want is your story about why you can't get what you want. So let's talk now about conversational intelligence. We've touched on it before. Neuroscientists show us that the first few words of a conversation boots up a particular mindset in the listener that then processes the entire remainder of the exchange. A conversation that begins with authoritative, critical, adversarial remarks, or just simply giving instructions as an authority would, activates the brain's circuitry of fight and flight. The reaction is processed by the cortisol adrenaline neurochemical system. The listener closes down for self-protection. Consider the opposite in one way of looking at it. A conversation that begins in a collaborative, collegial mode activates the brain's neurochemical system of bonding and connection, which induces listening without judgment to pay full attention to the speaker. This initial collaborative trusting response is mediated by oxytocin, which then frames the remainder of the sentence in conversation. It boots up a different mindset. The listener feels safe and understood in this mindset, one of collaboration, which is the essential aspect of coaching as compared to all other professions where the core framework is of consultancy, of being a consultant. Somebody presents a problem, and you give them an answer or tell them what to do. Trust develops with further collaboration to optimize performance and results. All successful sales are based on one factor, a relationship. People don't buy from people they don't like, and people can't sell to people they don't like. Enthusiasm accounts for more sales closing than any other factor. the transfer of enthusiasm changes the state of the other person. Confidence begets enthusiasm. The key to developing an effective engagement is to know what your unique proposition is, what you do better than anybody else. What is it that's unique and special about your product and service? Make that in 10 words or less. People won't buy your product or your service because it's as good as everybody else's. What's the point? They will buy it because it's unique in some way for them. Not you, for them. Your key job is to identify that unique advantage that sets you above everyone else for them and build your presentation around that. Your opening remark determines whether the prospect will listen to you. It needs to be planned out word for word. In the first 10 words, people decide if they're going to listen to you or not. So you don't begin with, well, here's how I would answer that. That's already 7 words, so you only got 3 left. Do you resonate with their need, their essential challenge? Remember the announcement of this seminar series, the example? Do you have significant expertise and credentials but not enough clients? Focus on the key benefit that that person will enjoy, not what you've done, your experience, how long you've been doing what you're doing, your credentials, that sausage. Hint at the result. Plant a seed of the benefit in your first question. If you ask a question, people are conditioned to respond to the question before they respond to anything else. Make sure your question is focused on the benefit that you bring to their problem. So, I want to cover, before we stop, a mastery model. Consider your body of work as the process of a creative mindset, a series of experiments that can be interesting, intellectually stimulating, and like solving a problem. Look for models. Look for someone who's doing business in an innovative and effective way to understand the key parts of their business model. Find someone who's doing what you want to do, having success at it, enjoying it. Learn from them, but do it in your way. It has to be your story. Define the phrases for your business. Here's an example of a definition. Define a specific target market. We already heard Pat talk about niche. Identify, and that's the who, but now this is I'm speaking parallel, a specific target market. Identify the unique problems or challenges of that target market. Make a case for whatever you want to do. Why this project? Who's the audience? How will you engage them? And the biggest question, what's your story? All of this is your homework. Before you open your mouth, create an initial offering of a service or product that solves that target market's problem. Test the offering with a finite number of people of ideal participants, perhaps initially in a focus group. Debrief your test and determine how it could be replicated. In other words, gather data not of what you want to hear or believe it should be, but what you actually get. Be scientific about it. Develop the business plan from lessons learned. Develop a following, your platform, such as your mailing list, blog, newsletter, LinkedIn, professional Facebook. Develop a product or service to sell. Test, debrief, continue building services and products. What's the next thing you want to add to your body of work? The next step. What do you want to create it? Create, name it, describe it. For example, a teleseminar. Who's it for? Describe your audience. Then begin to talk to them. Why does it need to get done for that group of people? Describe the roots of the project, how it fits into your body of work. How will you structure it? When does it need to be done? So focus on the basics, giving attention to every aspect of your products and services. Great work is built by great basics. Everything you do and produce needs to be totally professional. This includes proofreading and spell checking, even your emails. Deconstruct everything. The specifics of what actually leads to your success. The specifics of what works and what doesn't. If it works, do more of it. If it doesn't work, do something else. The evidence that we truly understand a pattern of behavior is when we know how to reverse it. So establish boundaries and framework for your work, schedule, personal and professional time, protect your energy. Establish, and this is all in your outline, so I'm just going to hit the highlights here. Establish a specific creative container for your work. Your physical space is important. Use the best tools you can afford. I learned that from my dad growing up on a farm and ranch. Learn fully how to use those tools, your computer, social and business media. Cultivate your voice. Everything needs to be your story told in your voice. Keep your focus on honoring your work. Listen to criticism and accolades, but ultimately take neither personally. Use it as information. Develop intuition, unique expression, ideas from your point of reference. Punch through the bag. Martial art teachers emphasize to punch through the bag when practicing jabs and crosses. Rather than focus on hitting the target, which will make your punch weak, set your target a foot behind the bag and aim to hit that. Same for your work. How today's goal relates to tomorrow's goal and to next year's goal. Your goal and your stretch goal. Plan all the way to the end. Think like a scientist. Keep an open mind about whether what you're doing works or not. Evaluate all feedback from an objective perspective. And obtain a full range of feedback from all sources. A scientist creates a working hypothesis, tests it, observes with curiosity, asks why, tweaks, retests, observes. Now, before we close, I want to talk about the circle. And this is more directly to the question I mentioned and Pat mentioned it at the beginning of the discussion. Imagine your audience as a person you're trying to persuade. Probably don't have to imagine that. To visualize this challenge, what I'd like you to do is to draw a stick figure to represent that person. And if you would, take a plain sheet of paper and draw a stick figure in the middle of that page. Next, draw a big circle around that stick figure. So this divides the world into two parts. You've just created two worlds there. Someone who understands the world the way the stick figure does belongs inside the circle next to the stick figure. People who don't understand the stick figure or the way the stick figure thinks belongs outside the circle. That stick figure is your client. To communicate effectively, your first job is to get in the circle. So the challenge is this. If your client does not see you belonging in that circle with him or her, they're not going to listen. They will not seriously consider adopting your point of view. You will remain an outsider who does not have influence. Think about how many times after one sentence you've moved on or deleted the email because they weren't speaking to you. They didn't get in the circle. Outside, no one will listen to you. Inside, they want to know you're on the same emotional page they are. First, identify something that your audience is experiencing. Resonate with that experience. Articulate the challenge or the pain points. This moves you into their circle. Listen carefully. Identify the kinds of emotions your audience feels. Then put yourself one foot in their shoe and ask yourself why they're feeling that way. Their specific challenge. See what they see. Feel what they feel and then find some part of their emotional experience that you can genuinely resonate with. You have to resonate with, to meet with your audience, where you find them, before they'll walk with you or before they'll let you in the circle, actually. Remember, we discussed how ample evidence shows that creating a strongly held belief has little to do with facts, even with logic. The best method, whether you're changing your mind or somebody else's or leading a group, is emotional, persuasive storytelling. Stories are more powerful than data because they allow us to identify emotionally with ideas and people otherwise disregarded or seen as outsiders, outside that circle. We tend to align with people who share our identity even if the facts disagree. Now, here's a description of how the circle technique works. A Wall Street Journal journalist followed Obama around at the beginning of his initial presidential primaries because he was absolutely baffled about how he was winning over so many people, and he reflected how so many people were puzzled about how he was charming voters in the heartland, where his ideology was radically different from theirs. Reporter Stephen Hayes followed Obama and analyzed his circle strategy. And this is the way he put it. His rhetorical gimmick is simple. When he addresses a contentious issue, Mr. Obama almost always begins his answer with a respectful nod in the direction of the view he's rejecting. A line or two that suggests he understands or perhaps even sympathizes with the concerns of that conservative person. He moves into the circle. Remember Lincoln's approach to arguing the case? Hayes cited an example in which Obama was asked about the Second Amendment. He began his answer by saying that having taught constitutional law for 10 years, he believed the Second Amendment granted individuals the right to carry guns, the conservative position, and that he respected the right of lawful gun owners to hunt and to protect their families. He was in the circle. Only then did Obama go on to talk about how he thought there should be new laws to help trace firearms used in crimes. At the end of his answer, Obama employed one final circle move, kicking his opponent out of the circle. A bold move, actually. He said, "The argument I have with the NRA is that they believe any constraint or regulation whatsoever is something they have to beat back. And I don't think that's how most lawful firearm owners think." Obama is left standing next to the lawful firearm owners, his audience inside the circle, while the NRA has just been declared bereft of common sense, cast out of the circle, not like us. Winning means not only getting inside, it also may mean pushing your opponent out. The circle vision suggests that to bring your audience over to your side, your first move should be to go where your audience is. Connect with the audience, then you can move forward together. Remember what my patient said. First, you've got to be with me before you can go someplace new together. And remember this in conclusion. From Macbeth, we learned that we are most vulnerable, not when we're beginning, not when we're destitute or needy, but after the biggest triumphs of our lives. For Macbeth, the moment the witches came, was after the most massive successes he had ever experienced of winning two battles and enjoying immense popularity. So this is the challenge of immense success. That's a whole subject in itself. Just look at Elvis, Marilyn, Janice, F. Scott, Kurt, Belushi, Philip Seymour. Some people need mentor coaches not to become successful, but to regulate their states of mind, to manage emotions, and to sustain success. And one final point. Let's talk about Girl Scout cookies. To see what else we can learn about sales, especially as it relates to a state of mind. Most Girl Scouts are taught to memorize a fairly complicated spiel, one that involves introducing themselves, talking in some detail about the good work the Scouts do, and finishing with how the money raised goes for great purposes. Now, this is tough work even for a professional, but for a kid talking to an adult stranger, it can be scary. It's unlikely to regularly lead to very positive experiences. But there's an alternative that doubles to triples the sales rate. It's the question, what's your favorite kind of Girl Scout cookie? Remember, questions focus our brains. They align the energy field of the brain. And in the first few words, determine a state of mind. In 10 words or less, all the nostalgic memories of cookies past are summoned. In one simple question, the power and the transaction shifts with a Girl Scout going from requesting to supplying. It's a question that avoids a no, a question that starts a conversation, a question that opens the door to emotion. Those are the questions that create value and build careers. The cookie memory record holder is Proust, who took one bite of a Madeline and tens of thousands of words later was still remembering nostalgically. The experience from the buyer's point of view is an emotional connection to something that has been in his life or her life since being a kid. There's a reason why they don't change the flavors of the Girl Scout cookies, as well as a positive reaction when a young person learning begins to speak up. Selling a state of mind far outpaces only selling Thin Mint cookies. Just a couple of minutes. I was hoping we'd have more. Your thoughts or questions or clarifications about any of this material? What's your take on this? Is this making sense to you, and does this add to what you have mentioned getting from...
Pat, it adds to that whole idea of laws of attraction and focus, right?
Yeah, the law of attraction is based in neuroscience, absolutely.
And,
yes.
And then that drawing that circle around stick figure is a very good illustration of getting inside, getting in sync with, and getting in the shoes of your client, both as a prospective client when you're trying to make the sell, and as you're doing the coaching. You need to have that empathic capacity, I guess, to hear what they're saying so that you can listen carefully and ask the right questions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, thank you for your comment, Pat. I appreciate that. Well, we're out of time, and I want to respect that. If there are any questions, don't hesitate to email me or keep them, and we'll discuss it at the beginning of next time. And for a number of you who I know are going to be listening to this, it'll be posted. You won't hear me say it'll be posted tomorrow until it's posted tomorrow. But if there are questions that you have or comments that you have, that's exactly what we'll pick up next time. So thanks very much, and hope you guys have a terrific Thanksgiving holiday, and we'll pick up right after that.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Take care.
Yeah.
Bye.